Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's a new year. Let's get organized. Like most New Year's resolutions, that's easier said. It's easier than it sounds for most of us. Let's face it, that sock drawer has been a mess for years. But what if you started with defining your top life priorities? Maybe that would change the course of how and where and when and whether you organize. That's the starting point recommended by the founder of the blog SimpleMom.net. Tish Oxenrider has written a new book on the topic. It's called Organized Simplicity, The Clutter-Free Approach to Intentional Living. She joined us today to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Tish.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, as I was reading the introduction, I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's not easier than it's harder than it sounds to get organized. It's not easier than it sounds. I don't know what that was, Freudian. I don't know what I was saying, because it's harder than it sounds to me. When did it occur to you that you were organized enough to actually write about it?
Well, it's kind of funny, because in some ways I still don't feel organized enough, because I've learned over the past few years that it's definitely a process and it's not a one-time goal. I don't think any of us can ever one day say, you know, I am done. I'm organized. I don't need to the rest of my life. So, you know, I look around at my stuff and I don't think I've totally arrived at all. But in 07, my family and I moved overseas. We moved to the Middle East, and it was me and my husband and my two-year-old daughter at the time. And we had to face all of our things and, you know, decide what stuff stays, what stuff goes, what do we sell, what do we keep? Because you're quite limited by the online or the airline luggage restrictions. Mm-hmm. So we went through every single item and made the tough decision of whether it was worth keeping or selling or taking with us. And at the end of all that, we had 15 boxes for our entire family, and we pretty much sold almost everything else. We had a very small storage unit left in the States. And then when we moved overseas to our new home, it was kind of nice. It was like a clean slate where we, you know, anything that we brought in that we bought, we kind of looked at it and said, is this worth having in our home? Is it not really that valuable to us? Do we even bother with it? And so I guess that process is the kind of hinge point for me to think, you know, it's just a matter of collecting too much stuff mindlessly. It's about not being intentional about our stuff.
You mentioned that folks, if something's sentimental, then you should save it. But that sort of, for me, is the rub. People measure sentimentality very differently. Mm-hmm. What's sentimental to one person is not to another. How do you recommend people sort of push the envelope on that?
Yeah, I think the thing that's important to remember is that relationships are more important than things. And so when you look at your things, it's very easy to tie that into the relationship. You know, I got this as a wedding gift, but I don't really like it, but it's from my great aunt Mabel. And if she finds out I got rid of it, she'll be mad. Well, kind of dig into that a little bit. Do you think she'll really be mad? Will she ever even know? If she knew that you were struggling with this, would she give you the freedom to just, you know, give it to a friend who could use it or like it better? So I kind of ask yourself what's really the root issue and not so much the thing. But you can also look into how we attach a memory to an object. You know, we look at some kind of tchotchke we got on a vacation, and we think that if we get rid of that thing, we're saying that vacation or that time in our life wasn't important. When really it's just the object that's taking up space if we don't love it. If we don't really like the thing, if it just is another thing to dust, it's not really providing any value to our home. It's just one more thing. It's no longer attached to that memory, if that makes sense.
Well, it makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you out there? Speaking of tchotchkes and other things that people have given you, gifts, grandparents, close friends, family, that sort of a thing, what have you done with objects that are not appealing to you, that you don't need or use or don't use anymore? Do you keep them? Do you hang on to them? What do you do with them? Do you drag them out every time they come and visit? What do you do? I will not tell you what I do because friends and family actually listen to this show. I wasn't born yesterday, but I'd love to know what other people do. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go online to the Ann Fisher, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. And, of course, you can find us on Twitter at Ann Fisher WOSU. When you say, Tish, that when you get, you say that when you get rid of things that don't matter, the things you do keep become that much more valuable. How so? And can you give us an example of something you kept?
Sure. Yeah. Well, what I mean by that, there's something in economics called an opportunity cost, which means the cost of an alternative that has to be foregone in order to pursue a certain action. So, for example, you have $15 and you're deciding whether to buy a book or a T-shirt. If you buy a book, the opportunity cost there is the T-shirt. If you buy a shirt, the opportunity cost is the book. So when we think about that being an added invisible cost to everything we keep, we kind of see the additional price tag to everything. So when we decide to bring in, I don't know, some really big toy, you know, that maybe we don't love, that's battery operated, makes a lot of noise, and our kids just don't love, the opportunity cost there is maybe visual clutter, maybe just not enough space in our home, it's maybe noise, all these things that just don't provide value to our home that we don't love. And so there is that additional price tag that's always on every single item that we keep, and it just, you know, it adds to our stress level, it adds to just our, well, it lessens our enjoyment of our home. And so anything we do keep, when we decide to look at the opportunity cost and decide, you know, it's not worth it, that makes everything else have more value in our home, and then we can truly enjoy it and truly love the things that we have. A very good example for me are my books. That is one of the few items that I have a hard time getting rid of. And so, but I do every now and then realize, you know, I've read this, I'm not going to read it again, and I purge it. And I go through that often. And whenever I do, I look at my bookshelf and I think, I like all the books here. These are the books I'm going to read again. These are the books I haven't yet finished. And they represent who I am and what I'm about right now. And so it just makes it so much more fun to look at my books and to live around them rather than just have a whole bunch that I just, you know, I'm kind of halfway okay with.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Tish Oxenrider. She's the author of Organized Simplicity, The Clutter-Free Approach to Intentional Living. You also may recognize the name from her popular blog. It is called, God darn it. SimpleMom.net. How can I mess that up? SimpleMom.net if you want to check it out. We'll have a link to that at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And Thomas, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I guess I kind of had a story to tell. My wife and I have been married for about 5 years, and I've battled, I think, just with our different mindsets in terms of what's good to keep and what's not. She's probably archived every single thing that she's ever had growing up.
You mean she still has it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like in our garage or in our store in our computer room, just in boxes. And, you know, one of the things I've always tried to talk to about her or about the items she keeps is just, you know, if you're not going to ever look at it again, if it's always just stored in a box, then what's the, you know, real purpose of keeping it? But I found that, you know, with our son that we've just had, one of the questions I've always asked is, you know, are these things like, you know, trophies that she's earned from, you know, playing soccer when she was little? You know, is this something that you really want your son to have, or would you rather archive the trophies that your son gets? So,
what does she say?
She thinks about it. You know, I think any logic that I throw at her, you know, she thinks about. But, you know, I'm battling the emotional connection that she has with it versus rational, you know, in my opinion, rational thought. And, you know, it's always a challenge.
Any advice, Tish?
Right. You know, I obviously see your side, Thomas, for sure, because what you're bringing up the question is, are you wanting to live in the past or are you wanting to live in the future?
Right.
And we all have a finite amount of space. I think sometimes our emotions get tied up in things and we start not thinking logically, where we just have this infinite amount of space, when reality, you know, we have X amount of square footage and there's only a certain amount of things that can fit in there. And so it's a tough walk, especially in marriages where two people have different definitions of what's clutter, what's clean. And, I mean, that's something I struggle with my husband as well. But, you know, when you look at relationships being more important than things, I think it's important to give each other a lot of grace, which it sounds like you're doing with your wife, which is good. It's not like you're going through and getting rid of it without her permission.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe.
Or maybe.
Yeah.
And she missed it yet, I guess is the question.
Right. No. And that's the thing. Like, there's been some things where, you know, it's old receipts, and I'm talking, or movies from the year, you know, 1985, and she talks about maybe scrapbooking it, and I just know she never will.
Right.
But anyway, as you were saying.
There's also an idea of having a maybe box, which, you know, could be, it doesn't have to be a literal box, but an idea of like, okay, we're not going to get rid of this right now, but let's set a deadline in 3 months. If we have not touched it, or in 6 months, if we have not touched it, then maybe we truly don't need it, because honestly, we use just about everything we need within the first 3 months, or within every 3 months, except for holiday items.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're obviously not touching it, then it's not adding value to your life. And you can also start out small, you know, declutter one small area and kind of just rest on it and enjoy the new space, enjoy the look and the extra room you have, and see if that kind of the bug takes effect, you know, where that feels really good.
Yeah. And you know, the other day we did that on Saturday, our bedroom,
is that a for you?
Yeah. you know, we're trying to put our house on market, and we found that, you know, we just need to declutter. And so she went through some of her old things from her deceased grandmother that she was given. And it was interesting to see the process of her getting rid of it, because she would apologize to her grandma, you know, sorry, grandma, I don't understand why you kept this, because her grandma maybe had a ribbon from her mom's wedding hat that was just a torn piece of cloth, you know, from an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, she would come to terms with it and, you know, she threw it away. So, yeah, I hope that bug does kind of take place.
Right, yeah. The question I like to ask myself whenever I look at an item and decide whether I want it is, there's a quote from William Morris, who's a 19th century architect, and he said, "Have nothing in your house that you don't believe to be beautiful or know to be useful."
Oh, yeah.
And so whenever I look at an item, I ask, is this beautiful or is this useful to anyone in my family? And so if it's not beautiful and it's not useful to me, then there's really no point at all to keeping it. And, you know, that's definitely easier said than done when you have one person. When you have a family, you know, my family, there's five of us. We have three kids. The definition of what my six-year-old daughter is going to find beautiful is definitely different than mine. You know, the rock collection on the windowsill for her is beautiful. And so I don't toss that. Even though I might not love it and it adds clutter, it's beautiful to her. But when it stops being beautiful, when it just gets in the way, then we toss it.
Yeah. Who was that that said that?
William Morris, 19th century architect.
And Tish sprinkles these quotes throughout her book, Organized Simplicity. I know that's in the book, right, Tish?
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well,
great.
Thomas, good luck. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
We have to take a quick break. We'll return for another segment with Tish Oxenrider, author of Organized Simplicity. What do you do with those gifts that you can't use, don't like, don't need? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Too often, first reports on a crisis or a tragedy get important facts wrong, and the shooting in Tucson was no exception. Mistaken reports of the Congresswoman's death proliferated at the speed of wireless, and so later did the apologies. I'm Neil Cunnan. What does it mean to get the story right, and what happens when you don't? next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 19 degrees in downtown Columbus. Some snow mainly before noon and then clouds in the afternoon with a few snow flurries. A high of 33 degrees today. There's a chance of some light snow tonight and a low of 26 degrees. A slight chance of morning snow for Tuesday and then partly sunny and a high of 35. Clouds Tuesday night and a low of 22 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Tish Oxenreider. She's the author of Organized Simplicity, The Clutter-Free Approach to Intentional Living. She's also the founder of the blog SimpleMom.net. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Tish, I want to ask you a question I've wanted to ask others, but and it's an aesthetic question regarding the colors you picked for your book. What is it about that sort of robin's egg blue and lime green or sage green or whatever the color is that is associated with cleanliness and organization and green and or something like that?
Yeah,
I think you had a consultant, didn't you?
There was definitely a book designer involved. Yes, I mean, I'm a designer myself, so it didn't. You know, I definitely liked what she did. But
yeah.
Yes, there's something associated with just calmness, I think, with the colors blue and green, and also associated with nature. So I think it just speaks to a little bit of peace more than the reds and oranges and, you know, the warmer colors, which are, I think, speak to a little more just. I mean, I don't know exactly the psychology behind it, but just a little more of the craziness or the busyness. And so that's why she chose the colors, and I love them.
Yeah, it is really very – and white, too. A lot of white and a little bit of lemon yellow here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's very, very pretty. 614-292-8513. Ruth from Westerville, welcome to the show.
Hi. First-time caller. I really enjoy your show, Ann.
Thank you, Ruth.
I just wanted to say that sort of as a reaction to the fact that my parents and were sort of clutter bugs, I have a tendency to try to purge things once a year. I do that. I do it every year. And I go through things and make sure that everything is, like you were just saying a minute ago, something I would use. And if I don't use it, then I purge it and I give it to Salvation Army. So, and I claim it on my taxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, Tish, you do talk about the idea of checking out value. My mom used to be a lot like Ruth at one point in her life, and then she stopped being like Ruth. But she got rid of all my Barbie dolls when I was in college, and I look back on that now, and I'm old enough to know those things would be worth some money right now.
True.
What about looking at things when you are going to do that annual purge? Are there any rules?
Yeah. It's, you know, a quick eBay search is super easy. And eBay is pretty much the going rate with a lot of collectible items. And so all you have to do is take a quick look and see if something really is valuable. If it is, go ahead and post it on eBay or even get it appraised or, you know, go into a little more detail. But if it's not, then, you know, a Craigslist sale is not difficult either. Sometimes you can get a little more money for that than at a garage sale. But really, I think a lot of times items we think are more valuable than they are because mm-hmm. of the emotional and relational attachment.
Ruth, have you ever gotten rid of something that you regretted later?
Not really, because the stuff that I tend to collect throughout the year isn't valuable. I mean, it really isn't something I would use. And I thought, you know, at the time when you get it, you think you will, and then you don't.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, that I have an issue with is I have boxes and boxes of photographs, family photographs, and I'm just not sure what approach to take with those.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what would you do, Tish?
Yeah, photos are definitely one of the harder items. If you have a scanner, just slowly start scanning each photo and, you know, making them a file and then putting them on a CD by year or by season. And then cataloging all the CDs, and it takes up much less storage space. I mean, you still store them. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And and then, you know, keep them in order, and also just work on it a little at a time. I think a reason a lot of us don't even bother at all is because we see this huge box of photos and we think, oh gosh, I'm never going to have time to do all that.
Yeah.
But if you do, you know, I don't know, a dozen a month, or not even a dozen, you know, a couple dozen a month,
yeah.
Over time it adds up. And you can also do other things at the same time, you know, like.
I do have them separated by different family branches. I do have that.
Oh, great.
Done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Ruth. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Shirley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd kind of like to take exception to your guest.
Okay.
As the family historian and genealogist, had it not been for old newspaper clippings and Chotskys, there's an awful lot I would never have learned about my family. I just recently compiled a family history that was like 90 pages long that included a lot of the information, a lot of photographs, and comparative things in terms of the, you know, how people lived in the 1920s compared to the 50s, etc. This information would all be lost if you just kind of threw everything away.
Tish?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I agree to some extent. I do understand the value. You know, I look at my grandparents' house, and they've got stuff from, you know, the Great Depression, and it's fascinating to flip through. And so I don't necessarily advocate throwing everything away. I think it's a matter of volume. It's a saving the quality over the quantity. You know, and as a family historian, you might know better definitely than a lot of people what is truly valuable and what's not. But, you know, it's easy to go through and think you need to save everything because it's old or because it might one day have some kind of meaning or value. But I think, you know, you might have a pretty good idea of what is truly a good thing to hold on to that might replicate, you know, what it was like back then or what's important to your family. But then to toss all the extra things, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
A lot of that information laid in the hands of other family who may not have thought that they were terribly valuable. I'd also like to give you one comment about scanning information in. Make sure you keep the technology up to date. If you started doing this a number of years ago, you know, you could have stuff that's on very old media format, which is no longer usable. So if you take all these photographs and documents and scan them in, every few years you have to upgrade the technology. You can't get 5 1/4 inch floppy disks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good point. I mean, it's just that's just a matter of, you know, just copying things over as it changes.
Right.
But that's a good point, Shirley. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513. I got some old photo albums from my grandpa from the 20s. He was a real shutterbug, and it's a lot of fun. And what's really interesting about them, and it tells me a lot about the time, is that there's none of the pictures are taken indoors. They're all outdoor pictures because, of course, they didn't have the flash yet, at least not for the average person. And I love looking back at those pictures, but it's something that I find really, truly beautiful, and I look at often.
Yeah.
Strangely, I do. And I actually have used them for paintings and things like that. 614-292-8513. Jeff, you want to talk about companies that will scan your pictures for you? Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Like you just said, I did a little bit of research on this myself. I had gone on a trip to Europe in 2001 and just had boxes and boxes of slides. I'm a history teacher and photographs. More stuff that I knew what to do with, but I wanted to save it, so I did a little bit of research, and there are companies that you can send all of your photographs and all of your, you know, your images to, and they will scan it in the you know, in digital format, and they'll send you back CDs. So, you know, it's a nominal fee. It might have been $50-$60, but when I thought about all the hours that saved me, I was really, really happy, and I'm very pleased with my results, and now I get to enjoy all my pictures clutter-free.
That's great.
That's a good idea. Thank you for the call, Jeff.
No problem. Have a good day.
Thank you. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Tish Axenrider. She is the author of Organized Simplicity, The Clutter-Free Approach to Intentional Living. I want to get to more calls and emails, but first, Tish, there's something that you call the, you suggest that people, when they're having a really hard time, maybe sit down and figure out a family purpose statement that might help them organize. What is that? What is that, and how would it help?
Yeah. My definition of living simply is living holistically with your life's purpose. And so that means all parts of your life are coming together and pointing in the same direction. So all your home, your physical stuff, your spiritual life, your emotional life, your relationships are all pointing towards one life's purpose. But the thing is, you need to know what your life's purpose is before you can start doing that. And so, in my book, Organized Simplicity, I have a chapter on how to create a family purpose statement. And you go through and you decide as a family, you know, I have some questions that help generate ideas and spark discussion, just what you're about. What are your values? What do you, what are more the most important things for you? What's not as important? And the thing that that's so helpful with this is because everybody is different, not every family is going to have the same purpose statement. When you have a statement, it helps you decide on everything else in your home. You know, are we a family that values the outdoors? Well, if we are, then that means we might invest more in things that we can use outside in our backyard or outdoor camping equipment or things like that. And that's where our money goes, and that's where our space allocation goes, and maybe not so much on, I don't know, entertainment or having dinner parties or that sort of thing. And it helps you decide as a family who you are and what you can get rid of and what you can, with a clean conscience, not worry about keeping because it's just not about you.
614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, we have a few more minutes with Tish Axenrider and Kieran from Delaware. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm totally on board with this. I had five children, and moving a couple times made a righteous woman out of me when it came to clutter. When you realize what you've got to move, then you rethink it. One of the things that I did was when looking at the children's clothes, and the children are now 40 to 24 years of age, I would just take out one item that had a special memory for me of that child, and then I put them in a memory box. And then as far as pictures go, what I would do with pictures is I would take the children's pictures from the time they were little, you know, until they finally graduated. And when they would get married, I would give that to them. And then that way they can share those with their children, pictures of what they were like when they were little.
I think that's a great idea.
That is a great idea. And I think a lot of, I don't know about all things, but I know artwork from kids is a common problem with parents. You know, mm-hmm. How do we keep every single item that our kid draws, or, you know, because it's all so adorable and perfect and precious. And I think photos are great for that. You know, you can take a photo of your kid's artwork, and it takes up so much less space. And you can also just keep a few items from every year and then turn that into a scrapbook instead of, you know, every single worksheet done in the first grade or whatever. It's just a small example of what the handwriting was like or what their artistic ability was like at that time.
I remember I saved the first thing he ever drew with legs on it.
Yeah.
Kieran, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Wonderful. Thank you.
You bet. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Here's an email from a listener. As a longtime apartment dweller and someone who works out of their apartment, I've always been conscious of clutter and of tidying up after myself. If I hadn't looked at or used something recently, out it went. This even applied to my portfolio from art school from 30 years earlier. I never looked at my schoolwork, so out it went. Well, now, 3 years later, I do regret having done that. My apartment may be uncluttered, but I foolishly lost an important part of my life. I would suggest taking a day or two, if possible, to reconsider throwing something out. One never knows. And you'd kind of give that same sort of advice, wouldn't you, Tish?
For sure. You know, and like I said with the family purpose statement, it depends on who you're about. With this person, obviously, artwork is important. So maybe not be so hasty with things like that you think might be useful later or beautiful later. you know, so know who you're about, know what's important. You know, all the Tupperware with the mismatched lids, yeah, that can toss. But maybe your artwork you might want to hold on to, just in case, but within reason even.
One of the things I did with my child's clothes that I couldn't bear to get rid of when he was very young, I saved the nicest stuff and all my favorite stuff. And then when very close friends or relatives would have babies, I would give them that along with something else new. And I would tell them that's something from my son.
Yeah, I think that's great.
And people really like that. Now I'm down to just a couple things because that's where I'm at. 614-292-8513, Joni from Columbus. Welcome to the show.
I'm a complete clutterbug, or I'm sorry, my husband's a complete clutterbug, and I'm totally organized, so that can be a problem. But he took his son's artwork because he's very sentimental, and somebody had mentioned scrapbooks and things like that. He actually had them framed, and they look great on the walls.
Yeah.
Various places that you can put them, and it's fun, and they're in their 20s now, and it's just so fun to see.
Absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of original artwork. We don't have anything that we bought at a store, and I love that. Kids get so proud about that, too, seeing their art on the wall. In our playroom, we have 4 frames that are just really inexpensive, and we rotate out artwork. You know, every couple months, we just switch out to some of their other things, and so it's fun, and it rotates, you know, super frugal, and it's very, you know, original.
There are certain kinds of frames, too, where you can just keep jamming pictures in there. They'll take
a lot
of different pictures.
Exactly. Yep.
So, well, thanks, Joni.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. We have time for a few more calls before Tish Oxenrider leaves us. So if you can get those in, do so in the next few minutes. Chapter 2, Tish, is entitled 10 Days to a Simpler, More Organized Home. And tell me, is that 10 days in a perfect world or 10 days that you have on vacation without having to go to work every day? How do you define a day?
Absolutely.
10 days over the course of 10 months.
Right. Well, and I think the thing to remember, this is 10 days towards a simpler, more organized home. It's not intended to be you know, you are completely done and you have arrived. It's just a springboard to starting a new life with more organization. And it is definitely a lot of work in these 10 days, but it involves the whole family, so it's not intended just to be you. And it's a lot of just the psychology behind items. So you go through each room and you decide its value, its purpose, and start working on decluttering there. But once you kind of have labeled a room with a certain value or a certain purpose, then it becomes easier over the next couple coming months to continue to do that, to continue to declutter. So it's not intended to be, you know, you are completely done at the end of these 10 days.
Now, I noticed that nobody called in with ideas about what to do with unwanted gifts. So I know you're out there somewhere. You just are afraid someone will recognize your voice is all. So that's too bad. I'm sort of, you know, hanging on to a bunch of stuff that I plan to hand down to the next generation. And I was wondering, you know, it's not stuff that I'm particularly going to use, but it's kind of, you know, sort of that sentimental thing. And then also, you know, for the grandkids. But when do you think, Tish, that young people are ready to embrace that sort of thing and value it and make those kind of wiser decisions about it instead of just dumping it because they think it's stupid?
Right. Yeah, well, it's definitely a personality thing. I think certain kids or certain young adults have more sentiment or are better caretakers of items, and you kind of just have a sense of who's better at that than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, you set an example throughout your family life of taking care of your items. And so I'm not saying that it's all on your shoulders to make sure that the kids do a good job, but they do follow our example. And if they see us taking good care of items, especially sentimental or valuable items, then they'll learn the importance of that. You know, especially even little kids, the way you handle something and the way you're careful with walking with it, they understand that that is an important thing. And so I think if they see you over the years doing that, then they might have a pretty good idea of the value or the sentiment of something, and then also just flat out talking about it, that this is a important item, this is something that's in our family, that it's meant to go down generation to generation. Are you willing to take care of this, to house it, to store it? And if they're not, then I don't know if it's time yet.
Well, Tish Oxenrider, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
My guest has been Tish Oxenrider. She's the author of Organized Simplicity, The Clutter-Free Approach to Intentional Living. She's also the founder of the blog SimpleMom.net. So when we return, we'll be talking to an expert on the obsessive compulsive disorder of hoarding and what that means and what can cause it. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks again, Tish.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, a multitude of parallel universes. Brian Greene explains how that's possible in his new book, The Hidden Reality. Greene's a theoretical physicist who says,
it's like a cosmic bubble bath of universes. Our universe is one bubble in this big cosmic bubble bath.
Join us for a conversation on the cosmos on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins later today at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Wednesday at noon, it's Tech Columbus Rising Stars, hosted by Ted Ford, the president and CEO of Tech Columbus. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a conversation about the joys and challenges of parenting in Central Ohio with Columbus Parent Magazine editor Jane Hawes. Join us for that discussion at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher. 19 degrees in downtown Columbus. Snow today, mainly this morning. A few clouds in the afternoon with some snow flurries, a high of 33 degrees. There's a chance of snow tonight and a low of 26 degrees, a slight chance of morning snow on Tuesday, and some sunshine in the afternoon, a high of 35. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. There's clutter, and then there's something more. There's hoarding, and that's a whole other ball of wax. Joining us now to talk about hoarding and hoarders is Randy Frost. Randy is an internationally recognized expert on obsessive-compulsive disorder and the compulsive hoarding. He is on the Speakers Bureau of the International OCD Foundation. The website for that is ocdfoundation.org/hoarding. We'll post that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Randy's written well over 100 articles on compulsive hoarding and several books. Most lately, he is co-author of Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. He is currently a professor of psychology at Smith College in Massachusetts. He joins us from there this morning. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be here.
If you could dispel one myth about hoarding and hoarders, what would it be?
Well, I think the biggest myth about hoarding is that people are simply lazy. Many times that's people's first reaction when they see a home that's absolutely full of stuff. But in truth, people who hoard really have very little control over their acquisition and saving of things.
What is the distinction? Where's that fine line between a collector and a hoarder?
Well, basically, the demarcation line is when the stuff begins to impinge on the person's ability to live. So if you can no longer sit on your couch, if you can no longer sleep on your bed, if you can no longer eat at your table, then the clutter has begun to interfere with your life.
You know, many, as you point out in your writing, many hoarders, they're charming people. I had a fellow that used to follow my column when I wrote a column for many years, and he would call me quite often, and we would have wonderful conversations, and he started to tell me that he was a hoarder and told me a little bit about the way he lived. I would never have guessed it from talking to him. So tell us about hoarders and their relationships with the outside world, and do they change over time as the hoarding becomes increasingly oppressive?
Well, hoarding is a very interesting phenomenon. I think one of the things you're seeing with your friend is that people who hoard have a very different way of looking at the world and a different way of thinking about the physical world. In many ways, their way of thinking is much more complex than the rest of us. Now, we originally thought in some of our research that maybe they're more intelligent than the rest of us. And maybe that's true, but I think partly they may just think in different ways. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. People who hoard tend to look at the unusual details of things. One of the cases in Stuff, Irene, one of the main characters in Stuff, when I visited her house one day, she said, her eyes lit up, and she said, "I've got to show you something." And she ran into the next room, and she came back with a clear plastic bag filled with bottle caps. And she said, "Look at these bottle caps. Aren't they beautiful? Look at the shape and the color and the texture." And it was clear to me that when I look at a bottle cap without a bottle attached, all I think of, the only theme that comes to mind is trash. But for her, the themes that come to mind are the shape, the color, the texture, the value, the potential uses for those things. So she's thinking about these things in a much more complex and detailed way than I am.
It's interesting when you put it in bottle caps. I kind of get what she's talking about. Also, people who collect buttons. But some people take those buttons and turn them into really cool jewelry. That's the difference, yeah?
It's partly the difference, yeah. In fact, in hoarding, there are really three major features that all kind of interact with each other. The first is a tendency to acquire excessively, either compulsively buying or picking things up. The second is an inability to let things go, an attachment to things that's so powerful that it's emotionally traumatizing to let things go. And the third thing is an inability to keep those things organized. And that's where people who hoard kind of fall down in this creativity business, because they see the potential for things. They collect all these things for that potential. Many of them see themselves as artists and craftspeople. But the problem is, after they've collected all those things, that disorganization in their life prevents them from really producing anything with that stuff.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak to my guest, Dr. Randy Frost, he's a professor of psychology at Smith College. He is also co-author of Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. It's a new book that was out last year. If you have a question or comment for Randy, give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. As you mentioned, some hoarders may have an intense perceptual sensitivity, as you write it, to visual details, which explains why so many objects can enamor them. But that's why so many, I mean, when you're talking about Irene with her bottle caps, she also collected a lot of other stuff besides bottle caps.
She collected a lot of other stuff. And you can see each of the three features for her. For her, she couldn't go to New York City, because if she went to New York City, she would see a newsstand. And whenever she saw a newsstand, she would think to herself, "Look at all those newspapers and all those magazines. Somewhere in all of that, there's a piece of information that could change my life. How can I walk away without it?" And that thought was just tormenting to her. The only way she could tolerate it was to cross to the other side of the street and look away. And a not uncommon reaction among people who hoard is this very intense attachment to things that gets formed almost immediately on mm-hmm. sight.
I can't remember the name of the fellow in the book, but you talked about a guy who had purged some stuff at some point in his life. And when you went to visit him, he was still mourning the loss of something like a door sign or a door tag or something like that.
Yes.
And very viscerally mourning it.
This was Ralph. Ralph got in trouble with the health department in his town. And the health department came and actually cleared out most of his home. And they threw away things that he valued, that when the workers went through, they didn't really see the value. Now, this is another part of this complex, you know, this disorganization feature of hoarding. When you look at the home of someone who has a hoarding problem, all the stuff is in the middle of the room in a big pile, and it looks like trash. And so when people come in to try to clean it out, they tend to just shovel it all out. But in truth, it's a mixture of valuable and worthless things. And that's part of this disorganization problem of people who hoard. And that really got Ralph in trouble, because he lost some things that were of great value to him. One of them was the nameplate to the door to his home. And he lived in the house that his parents lived in when he was young. Mm-hmm. And he he lamented one day to me. He said, they dethroned my father's name when they threw away the nameplate to the home that was just in the pile of clutter somewhere.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak to our guest, Dr. Randy Frost and Madeline from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I would love if the physician or the speaker would talk about the different shades of gray. I know we humans are fascinated with the oddballs and eccentric sorts of folks, but there are a great number of us that fall in the shades of gray. For instance, I work full-time. I manage just peachy, but my paper clutter is a wee bit distressing to my spouse. I think what you're talking about also are some of these very the anxiety disorders that are out there that are not necessarily diagnosed, but all the shades of gray of what the brain does and doesn't do, and I'll listen off air.
Okay. Thank you, Madeline.
Well, thank you, Madeline. I think one of the most interesting things about hoarding is the fact that the attachments that people who hoard form to their objects are exactly the same thing. Exactly the same attachments that all of us form to our possessions. Possessions have magical properties for all of us. So that ticket stub from a favorite concert, for instance, is something that has value that goes beyond the physical properties of the stub itself. So in some ways, it's magic. We assign the value to that object. The value has nothing to do with its physical properties. And that's something that all of us share in terms of our ability to form attachments to things. And that's why hoarding is not so unusual when you think about it, even though you look at someone's home and it looks really very different. But when it comes down to the nature of the attachments, they're much the same.
George from Powell, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much for your time. Really enjoyed the program.
Thank you.
Question, doctor. Regarding psychological disorders such as Asperger's, attention deficit syndrome, is there a correlation, myself, as with the previous caller, in the different shades of gray, I'm also the same type of person. I've been able to reach senior management due to my creativity, but I often will hoard information in order to underwrite what it is I'm trying to build that's new, that's very important to our corporation, and I probably have been fortunate enough to create two or three new types of processes that have really helped our industry. So I've been told that you're disorganized, yet you're very creative and you can get things done. So are they mutually exclusive, and is there a correlation with things like Asperger's and attention deficit disorder? Thank you. I'll take offline.
Thank you, George.
George, those are a number of interesting questions there. First off, we do see a very close connection between hoarding and attention deficit disorder. The ability to organize one's thoughts, to organize things, is something that is problematic for people with hoarding problems. Now, the shades of gray that you talk about and that Madeline talked about a few moments ago, here is where this organizational feature comes in. People often have intense attachments and save a lot of things, but as long as they can keep them organized, then it doesn't interfere very much with their ability to live. The more disorganized they are, the more ADD-like they are, the more interference you're going to see. Now, it's true, I think, that we see more creativity, as I talked about a few minutes ago, with focusing on details, being able to think about these things in a much more complex way. And so we see a lot of this creativity, and it's the disorganization that gets in the way of that creativity. As far as Asperger's goes, we do see some hoarding behavior in Asperger's. But it's much more of an intense focus on a narrow range of objects. In most cases of hoarding problems, what we see is people who save everything they come in contact with, pretty much. But in Asperger's, we tend to see people who save a much more restricted type of object.
I have time for a few more calls. Mark from Marysville, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
We have an individual here in Marysville. She's been on the show Hoarders before. She's been featured on it. Her house has caught fire in the past. The health department condemned it. She had to clean out a lot of stuff. After the hoarders people came in and cleared out a bunch of stuff, months later, they came back, and she was furious because of what they had done. She has a daughter that's schizophrenic, and this is all stuff that, you know, you can access online. I don't see it so much of a mental disease as or a mental illness as the fact she's escaping from reality the way an alcoholic, to be blunt, escapes into a bottle, a drug addict into the syringe or the joint, whatever you want, whatever drug of choice they choose to use. And I think it's her own personal choice. She does not want to deal with reality, so she escapes into this world. And I'm not saying I totally disagree with everything the professor's saying, but we can't sanitize this stuff. These people have their free moral agents, and they're choosing to live like this and not deal with reality. And I'm not saying they should be arrested or anything, but I think it's not so much mental illness as a choice,
Randy,
their own choice.
Randy, you actually compare it to or to say that hoarding has been linked to gambling addiction.
We think that this is associated with a pathology, really, of acquisition, the attachment and acquisition of things or money and so forth. The gambling connection is, we're not quite sure of that, but at least mm-hmm. in some studies it looks like it's there. With respect to mental illness, I think that the difference here, and I think that the thing that's confusing, is that most mental illnesses involve people's behavior. And we all are free to choose different kinds of behaviors, and we choose them for a variety of reasons. And sometimes we choose ones that produce problems for us, and that's exactly what's happening here. Now, if you see someone with a hoarding problem, they typically have very little control over the behavior, and often they will attempt to control. And you see this sometimes with people who are on these shows where they come out and clean out the home. They don't quite anticipate that the emotional reaction they're going to have to losing all this stuff. And it, in many ways, with this kind of approach where you go out and do some kind of wholesale clean out of someone's home, it really is, in the long run, ineffective. It may change the condition of the home temporarily, but the behavior itself doesn't change. The acquisition, the difficulty throwing things away, that doesn't change without a little more sustained effort of treatment.
Randy, we can't get to all the calls, but a couple of them want to know, where can you go for help?
Well, the best place to turn is the International OCD Foundation website, ocfoundation.org. There's a hoarding center there, hoarding resource center, and included in the website is a therapist finder for people in your area who know how to do treatment, for psychological treatment for hoarding problems.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank thank for all the callers and the emailers, and also Dr. Randy Frost. You've written hundreds of articles now. Most lately, you're a co-author of Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding, and the Meaning of Things. Randy, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann. Enjoyed being here.
That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.